Ladies, gentlemen, and fuckers that put my phone number in the bathroom stall at Pantheon, this is the Conan's Theory.
I'm your co-host, Harrison Williams.
I'm your co-host, Chris Thomas.
And I'm your Cobra Commander co-host, Stephen Lacey.
And I'm your moderator, Andrew Wallow. Joining us tonight is guest commentator, Stella Williams.
Hello. Whoop.
Yeah. Finally got a woman in here.
Hey, we had
that's
Avril
what you
in
think.
Here.
Welcome. Yes.
Singers.
Bazinga.
Also with us is the crew. We have Elliot Gilliard on our sound tech and Pilot Matuzak fact-checking for us tonight. So we've got a pretty good episode tonight. We're going to be talking about TV shows that have been turned into movies.
TV movies, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Though hopefully not the ones we find on Lifetime.
Hey, I like Lifetime.
You would. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be checking in with fan feedback. But before we do that, we're going to get into Weekend Actuals.
Woo! All right. Weekend Actuals.
Weekend Actuals.
Ba-da-boo! Does anybody have the Weekend Actual numbers?
I actually do have the Weekend
Not so actual.
You said Weekend Actuals and you looked at me as though I was about to start reading them. And I was like, I don't have those numbers handy.
These Weekend Actuals.
Anyway. Not a whole lot of changes this weekend. Coming in at number 10 was Journey 2 with 1.3 million.
Hanging in.
Yep, wow. Still on there. Number 9, the Ryan Reynolds and what's his name? Denzel Washington?
Denny.
1.4 million.
Yeah, oh, Safe House, right.
Yes.
Safe House. Opening this weekend at number 8 was October Baby with 1.7.
What's that?
That is... All right, it's got a 24% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
It's looking pretty bad. It's the story of a girl that finds out that she's the survivor... She's the adopted survivor of a failed abortion attempt.
Holy shit.
Woo.
Yeah, is this
I don't recognize any of the cast or the crew.
No, wait. John Schneider, was he isn't that
Whoa, is that the Duke?
That's Bo Duke.
Oh my God, yes it is. Jasmine Guy.
And Jasmine Guy.
Who is Jasmine Guy?
She was on
A Different World,
which was the spinoff of the Cosby Show.
Harlem Nights, yeah.
Oh, and Harlem Nights,
Eddie
that's
Murphy's
right.
Murphy's love interest in Harlem Nights.
Who plays the adoptee?
Rachel Hendricks. No. Yeah, Rachel Hendricks.
The survivor.
The survivor. Does it use Beyonce?
Wow, you guys are going to burn it out.
During the credits, one-way ticket anything. Right here.
Yeah.
Survivor theme song.
Survives.
Does she really
And that's like a
Survivor?
Mediocre life. That's it. That's the hook.
All right. Well, moving on. Number 7.
Are we done with that one.
Are we done talking about this?
Do we leave it?
So I take it it's a drama.
I'm assuming it's a drama. Who directed it?
And I'm going to go ahead and guess
Andrew
that it's...
Irwin? And John Irwin?
The Irwin brothers.
I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that this is a faith-based film. That's my thought.
Is it Fox Searchlight?
This is what could have been if you hadn't gotten that abortion, you whore.
Basically, yeah.
Kind of, right.
You're burning in hell. It's too late. You've already done it. So we're just kind of retro.
Pilot, check the awards for me. See, it has one win there.
Wow.
Or
two wins.
Looks like Razzie Best Picture. No.
Red Rock Film Festival won the Grand Jury Prize and the Special Achievement Award.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Huh. Interesting.
The prestigious.
Yeah,
the highest
honor at the coveted Red Rock in Utah.
In Utah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And it's got
so not even the real Red Rock.
And it's got a 24% on Rotten Tomatoes, you said? Interesting.
Yeah.
Well.
So.
All right. Well.
That one.
Moving
let's,
on from that.
Yeah.
Film.
Let's go so ahead and leave this abortion.
We all just heard of it.
it's a movie. It's out there. It's got some actors in it.
All right.
Yeah, feel good. Lighthearted. Right.
Well, moving on. film. Jesus.
Abortion survivors.
Number 7 was Project X with 1.9 million.
What they don't mention is the abortion was performed when she was 14. that's kind of the Shyamalan.
So it isn't.
That's a Shyamalan twist on that one.
Wow.
God damn it.
Yeah. Wow. Wouldn't it be so fucked up if that was it? Like, that was the real. Laugh now.
Moving on.
Project.
All right. We've lost the moderator. Moderator down.
Moderator down.
God damn it. Number six was Eddie Murphy debacle, 1,000 words, also at 1.9 million.
That's at number six?
Yeah, still.
Yeah. How does October Baby feel about being beaten out by that?
Yeah, really.
Like,
was this opening weekend for the old O Baby?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, baby.
Oh, baby.
Oh, oh baby.
Like, oh, baby, you got beat at the box office. Hey-o.
Hey-o.
I beat the baby.
Jesus. Number five, Act of Valor.
Act of Valor, yeah. Hanging in there.
Still hanging in there.
Slow movie season.
John Carter of Mars, $5 million.
Woo, go see it.
All right. It's really good. So it's at number three then? Or number four?
Number four.
All right, good,
did
good.
You see that? Did you see that song?
I did not. I chose to see Safe House instead.
Please leave.
How did you feel about Safe House, man?
I enjoyed it.
Sweet.
Yes, no, it was pretty good.
Nice.
My input.
Nice.
All right.
Nice.
Back to John Carter.
Beating John Carter still at number three is The Lorax at 13.1 mil.
Oh. Wow.
That's not a big shocker.
Yeah. No.
Anybody seen it?
Nope.
No.
Lorax?
Yeah, Lorax, no.
Nope.
No, like I said, I don't like Danny DeVito.
Really?
Doing it.
I don't think Danny DeVito.
When did you
I don't like
this?
Him breathing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Danny DeVito's the man.
All right. I liked him in Get Shorty, and that was about it.
Ruthless People?
Yeah. Throw Mama from the Train.
No. Yeah, come on. It's Always Sunny?
No, yes. Especially not It's Always Sunny.
Really?
No. Wow.
Not a fan.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
On. Really?
Rayo, the best role.
Yeah, Taxi. Taxi, for God's sake.
Yeah, no, just can't do DeVito.
He was an ally to Andy Kaufman, wasn't he? Like, during Andy Kaufman's life, DeVito was like his homie.
Yeah, well, and I want to say that DeVito produced.
Oh, yeah. He oversaw it. He actually acted in it. Not as himself.
Right, right. That's right. He played
the guy who discovers Kaufman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I forget his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the name of the movie?
Man on the Moon.
Man on the Moon.
Yeah.
Somebody please take my geek card, please. All right. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Gone. Till the end of the episode.
All right. Well, number two opened last week was 21 Jump Street at $20.4 million.
Almost 21 million.
Wow.
See what I did there with the 21 Jump Street? 20, yeah, sorry.
21 Jump Street's got a whip.
And we'll get more into that later. Opening this weekend, though, was Hunger Games, number one, at $152 million.
Really?
$152 million, which, for the record, is the third largest opening of a movie in history, mm-hmm. behind only Dark Knight and Deathly Hallows Part II, Harry Potter.
Really?
And this is the biggest opening of an original, like not a sequel movie, but the first in a movie franchise.
Wow. Really?
I mean, it's insane.
Like, yeah, they're making it. They're going to do the sequel.
Yeah, and yeah.
I saw it on premiere night. And,
really?
Oh, yeah. And there was at least upward of about like 10 theaters. Yeah. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's...
They were all
The theaters full. Are still running like every 30-minute showings.
It's oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's yeah, insane. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We saw the like 12:30 one. Yeah. Happened to get seats
I saw
early.
It, yeah, I saw it yesterday, which is Sunday.
Left my keys in the girlfriend's car door.
Oh.
Is that a euphemism?
No, that's literal. That's what's known in the biz is literal.
That actually happened.
That kind of totally happened.
Okay.
I had to go knock
now
on
Now the important
door.
Question is she still your girlfriend?
Yes.
Okay, well,
She's
that's good.
Very, very sweet.
That's forgiving. Good. That's good.
Yeah. There was people by the car, like,
really?
You know, kind of like, you know, kind of deliberating. We were like, you know, what's this about? And we walked up. And we're like, hey, what's up? And they're like, oh, is this y'all's car? And my girlfriend's like, yeah, it's mine. She's like, we're so sorry. The keys were just hanging in the door. You know, and I'm like in the middle. You know, because like I'd run out earlier to grab like the Charleston scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. And get like right for Hunger Games.
Right.
So that played a kind of – there was a little bit of a role, some RPG going on there that might have played. But yeah. Yeah, man. But, yeah, I had to go back to the theater and knock on the door. And all that. Retrieve the keys because we were like the last one of the last showings, like 12:30 or whatever.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
How was it?
Hunger Games. Now this is coming from the perspective of I've never read the books. Sort of knew a very little bit of, you know, just picked up from here and there about it. I knew it was like sort of a craze, and I knew that it basically had sort of the premise of a film that I'm actually a really big fan of called Battle Royale, a Japanese film. And not necessarily the same root premise, but the same idea of sending a bunch of kids to a natural battle arena setting to kill each other off until there's only one left. And I don't know. So to me, I'll say this. I enjoyed it. It was cool. Like I, you know, it was adequate for me. Like it was cool, but I didn't love it. Like I didn't think it was super duper awesome. And it was very much for the, you know, PG-13 set in America, whereas Battle Royale was like 15 and up or something like that. I guess it's Japanese version of a teen movie, but it was like gory. Yeah. As shit. More of like over the top comic booky, like blood spray, like throat slash, but it was graphic nonetheless. And so there was a lot of violence implied in the Hunger Games. It was definitely, you know, there was a little bit shown. It was always cut really short. And for me, I was always aware that they were sort of trimming it out. And I understood that it's PG-13. I understand the demographic, but it just, for me, wasn't as visually powerful as, you know, Battle Royale, you know, where there was like no holds barred, you know, within reason, but still, you know, pretty violent. But I dug the story. I liked the characters. It moved along like a book series does to me. Like you're just sort of zooming by this information, this art, you know, they have a little paragraph on the screen at the beginning where you kind of catch up to what, you know, is going on in this world and stuff like that. But my girlfriend's read the books. She really liked them. And she, there was a few things that were different, but all in all, I would give it just out of like enjoyment factor. I'd probably give it like 3.5 stars.
Really?
Yeah.
Because see, I saw
out of five.
And the big thing, the big difference with opinion that I noticed was, I guess, the expectation of what you were looking for. Because I went to see it last night, and to me, it kind of struck me as this film that is kind of not on the coattails, but just in this craze that's been going on in the last 10 years. It seems like with a lot of like children's movies where they're all like a lot of films are coming out based on like young adult, not like kids books so much, but like young adult books. So like yeah. This, like the kind of like, you know, 15 to 18 year old books, the kind of stuff that like appeals to like high schoolers that read, I guess. But, you know, stuff like, Chronicles of Narnia, Golden
R.L. Stein,
right. Aragon, Harry Potter, of course. And then, you know, a few other movies,
Twilight.
And this, because when I went into it, I heard I'd heard the premise, and it I was curious how they were going to handle it, because most films that are based on, you know, like young adult novels really 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 tone down the violence. But I mean, the whole premise of this story is death. I mean, like the end result, the end game is death. And I thought that for my expectation, I was expecting a lot less of the amount of violence and gore that you see. There's a scene right at the beginning when they're first introduced into this battle environment. And especially for the demographic that they're going to, I can see it being a very intense scene to watch. It's the violence is pretty stylized. It's not just like out there blatant with the violence, but it is. I mean, there's a lot of like camera shake, and there's a lot of like the same kind of thing they did in Saving Private Ryan when artillery shell would go off, where like the sound is all kind of like muffled. A lot of that, which I really liked, and they don't ever really seem hesitant about the death of a young child, which I think is one thing that I, as like an older viewer, like I thought was pretty moving about the story. You know, like what he said, I really liked the story, the character progression and the building of it was really well done. I didn't really see any performances that I didn't like. Actually, the kid, he plays Pita in the story. He was also in Journey 2. He was in Zathura. He's been in a few other things. His name
Josh Hutcherson.
Yeah, Josh Hutcherson. This is the first movie that I've liked him in. I the other films that I've seen him in, I really could not stand him. And it kind of, I guess he was just kind of one of those like child actors that's trying to play a lot more mature than he actually is, which bothers me for some reason. But I really liked him in this. I think he's kind of coming into his own. So I'm excited to see what more he does now that he's kind of getting to an adult age.
Something I can say about the look of the film that I noticed and thought was pretty cool was that they managed to get this I don't know if you'd describe it as like dystopian, but this kind of future.
No, absolutely, yeah. It wasn't so much like a sci-fi movie. It was weird. It was like this fantasy sci-fi future. It was
right. The point that I'm making is that like the future was supposedly really colorful and kind of plastic, sort of almost like Fifth Element-y, sort of like. But they did a really good job of adding that sort of like bleak element,
right?
That where there was that like. Just a valley between you and the color where it was, yeah. It's sort of almost like a bluish, I don't know, like a depressing air.
I think a lot of it was just, they were putting really vibrant colors against a really, really gray earthy background. Like everything that, you know, everything that the people were wearing was very colorful. And well, I mean the people that came from, you know, money were very colorful and vibrant. And then everything else like around like the setting and everything was just like stark. And that's one of the things that I really liked. At first, the set design looked like it was going to bother me just because like some of how outlandish some of the costumes and stuff were. Mm. But they seemed to tie it together really well.
I wanted to see a little bit more of her relationship with Lenny Kravitz's character.
Which I think – because there's two more stories. Lenny Kravitz, by the way, does a really great job. It's the first film that I've seen him in. I don't know what other acting credits he has, but he did a really stellar job with this. And there's two more books. I kind of cheated and looked up the – plots of the other two, but just to see what they were going to do with it. But it's definitely like from what I've read, they're going to get back to it. And I think I also felt like Donald Sutherland, who plays the world that they live in is called Pan Am, and Donald Sutherland is like the president of this union.
How far in the future is the story set?
I think it's more of like an alternate. I don't want to say like alternate reality, but it's kind of like just. If it is in the future, it's so far into the future that the idea of like countries doesn't really exist, or it's never really spoken about. Like the main premise is the Hunger Games are these games. It's kind of like a tribute once a year,
right?
So Pan Am had a revolution basically, and a bunch of the districts rose up against the main, you know, leaders of Pan Am, and the rebellion was crushed, and so every year. Each district has to put up two tributes, a male and a female, to battle to the death in this Hunger Games. I wouldn't say it's like alternate reality, but it's just, if it is in the future, it's so far into the future that it's...
Do they ever actually establish?
They don't establish anywhere other than Pan Am,
right?
That I remember. Yeah. Which I thought was kind of cool. It keeps it a little more centralized. It doesn't kind of leave your mind to wonder about like other things that they don't, you know.
I liked Stanley Tucci.
Yeah.
Shout out to Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, he was really awesome. Yeah. It had really a really good. Surprisingly good cast for like not the child, like not the younger actors, like the supporting older cast was really, really well done.
Yeah.
But yeah, Donald Sutherland, I can tell, is going to be a big player in the next few.
He's pretty scarce.
He was a little scarce in this one. It also has the guy from American Beauty, the Chris Cooper's son.
Wes Bentley.
I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he actually did it. He was really cool in it. His crazy eyes definitely were well utilized. His beard though bothered me.
Yeah,
just because I couldn't figure out how
like
they shaved
it. The front
it.
Of like a tricked out, vintage hot rod.
It was like
flames.
Yeah, it was.
Shaved into
it was all
beard.
Like very curvy. Yeah. It was like a very organic shape.
It reached.
Yeah.
Into the sci-fi world of fashion, hypothetical fashions.
All right. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Woody Harrelson was also in it, as good as always, as he always is.
So you said you gave it a 3.5 out of 5, Mr. Thomas. Yeah. What about you, Mr. Williams?
I'd give it a solid 4, maybe 4.5. Like I really enjoyed it, probably because I noticed the Battle Royale similarities, but I noticed it after the fact. So after I was able to enjoy the movie, then I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is kind of like Battle Royale.
Yeah,
but it wasn't in my mind when I was watching it, so I think that's why I might have enjoyed it a little more.
And to be clear, like as far as like, you know, the way I see Battle Royale and Hunger Games is, it's not necessarily a matter of like, I think it's like plagiarism of a plot or anything like that. I just think it's like once you've seen material handled a certain way and then you sort of see it handled another way, you know, the original just speaks to me a lot more.
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you.
When did Battle Royale come out?
Battle Royale
2001?
Yeah, it was like
something like that. Not too long ago.
Right.
2000.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Based on a
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Based on a famous manga. Battle Royale 2000, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Gilliard was just informing us that it's based on a manga. So, yeah, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real good.
Which, for those of you that don't know, is just Japanese for comic book.
Right, yeah, yeah, pretty much.
It's got, what's her name? I think I might have mentioned this on the Tarantino podcast.
Yeah.
The girl who plays Go-Go. Is it Go-Go?
From mm-hmm.
Ruthless.
Yeah, from Kill Bill.
Sailor Moon.
Well, isn't she, is that the same girl who was in Brothers Bloom?
No.
I don't know.
You're talking about Bang Bang from Brothers Bloom?
Yes.
I don't believe
is
so.
Is that the girl from Babel?
She was in something else.
She,
you know what? Yes, that
that's
was
her. That's yeah. the girl from, yeah.
No, yeah, she
her
was,
name,
that was not Bang
is,
Bang.
Settle on the top real quick. Chiaki Kuriyama. Hi.
Overachiever.
Kuriyama. And those are the only two films that I recall seeing her in.
She was in Pulp Fiction?
No, she was in, Kerr Bear.
Oh. Well, I knew she was in Kill Bill. I saw something on the screen that said that.
Yeah.
Apparently that was just her favorite movie.
Oh. Interesting.
Very interesting. So you gave it like four.
I'd say like
four,
four and a half. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Can I get a what?
What?
What did I
do?
Oh. What?
Now it's like a three. Well, all right. Before you, let's just come back. Say something along the lines of
we're recording.
Yeah,
right now.
Oh, okay.
So cut that.
Cut that.
We'll cut.
I'm just gonna mimic you until
until time goes out.
Background of it now.
Yeah.
Taking a little dance break here.
Whose fingers are those?
Man, that chick's got a nice ass.
Yeah, it's a very quiet. This is a very quiet, dignified rave
about
club.
That chick.
Everybody's got rave. We all have rave music and headphones.
God. All right. Well,
yeah, it's silent party.
Okay, I think that so that'll I think that pretty much wraps up the first segment here. We're gonna take a quick break, enjoy the musical interlude, and we'll be back with more Coneheads Theory in 30 seconds or less.
Here's White Zombie with More Human Than Human.
Christopher Nolan could, in fact, be the worst director currently working in Hollywood today.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's a scumbag.
He's a fucking hack, is what.
Yeah.
So.
I already into training.
He had me for a split second at Memento. Really loved Insomnia.
You liked Memento?
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. I think he started strong, and then I think it was around Batman Begins.
No, that's
just a nosedive.
Right. No, that's a fair assessment.
I would say
you made
actually,
Joel Schumacher look like Jesus.
I mean, seriously, who thought Inception was like a good idea? Other than Christopher Nolan, obviously.
Not me.
Yeah, me either. All right, so 21 Jump Street. I believe that
that's a nice segue.
Mr. Wallow and Mr. Williams have both seen this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why
not together?
No. It wasn't a mandate.
So it wasn't a mandate?
No.
Okay,
yet.
Fair enough.
Yet.
I went into 20. I was actually really hopefully optimistic about 21 Jump Street, and it was weird. I found myself being really excited to see Channing Tatum do something funny, because up until now, he's done a lot of these kind of like typecast roles, and it seems like he's actually trying to break out of that, which I would say he was pretty successful with in 21 Jump Street. He was actually, especially in the scenes where he was on his own with some of like the smaller cast, he was extremely funny, I thought.
You mean like he didn't have Jonah Hill to play on?
Right, yeah. Like when he was basically just having to hold the scene on his own, he was doing a really good job with it.
Yeah, I didn't expect him to do as well as he did.
Yeah, he did really well, though. I liked him. Overall, I thought it was a really solid kind of play on... It was, of all of the films based on TV shows, it was one of the more... it was one of those films that was more aware of it than I've seen in the past, where like they were just blatantly making jokes about the fact that they were doing a movie based on a TV show
and having a lot of fun with that idea.
Right.
It was really cool. They had some great smaller roles, some great cameos, a really surprisingly strong cast. I mean, what
God,
did you think
I'm
about
so
it?
Tempted to ask about cameos.
Not a word.
Richard.
No, I actually thought it was pretty funny. I mean, there were parts where the rest of the audience was laughing, and I was just kind of sitting there, and then there were parts where I was trying really hard not to bust my gut, and everybody else was just kind of looking at me. But no, all in all, it was a really funny movie.
Yeah.
And it actually, you know, the basic premise is that, you know, two cops have to go undercover as narcotics agents in a local high school. And I thought it was interesting and really well done that they played a sort of romance between Jonah Hill and another character that didn't come off as completely creepy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was something that when I saw, like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what was so cool was that they did it in a way that you just for some reason were accepting it. And like, even when you were thinking about like, this is kind of weird that I'm so okay with this, but it just for whatever reason.
How mad can you get at Jonah Hill?
Right. Exactly. Right.
Well, the way that his character was written was that he knew that just wasn't kosher. He couldn't do anything like that. So it was
Did you notice that Jonah Hill, I don't want to say he had a different type of comedy, but like it just, the Jonah Hill that I saw in this, which is the first skinny Jonah Hill film that I've seen, it just wasn't the same. Did you feel
that
way? I
actually appreciated it more.
I can see that. It's just, I don't know. It's just.
I do know what you mean. It was definitely different. He had a different sort of
rhythm
to his
jokes. Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's just. You know, maybe it does have something to do with the fact that he lost, like, what, 500 pounds?
I mean, a huge amount of weight.
I feel like I've been getting the vibe that he wants to be a more serious actor, too.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Well, I mean, he did just get, he got the nomination for Best Supporting Actor for Moneyball, which, you know, while that, there were definitely, did we all see that?
I never saw it.
I actually have that waiting for me at home.
Oh, nice. I mean, the thing is, there's definitely, he has funny moments, but he definitely is playing it as a serious character, and that was really nice.
No, sure.
So I dug that. And I haven't had a chance to see 21 Jump Street because I'm lazy.
Yeah.
But it's on my list.
Actually, that and The Hunger Games both have 85% on Rotten Tomatoes.
No way.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been hearing just only good things about 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, it
like,
really is
everything
good.
Everything I've heard has been
good. Jonah Hill is, you know, the story of his character is that he gets to go back to high school and sort of, you know, redevelop a sense of confidence, which I feel like kind of mirrors Jonah Hill's actual human real life persona in that he's lost a bunch of weight. He's got an Oscar nomination under his belt.
No, sure.
And I see him becoming a more solid actor.
Nice.
I love the fact that they play on the idea of what high school
used to be.
What high school used to be, or at least what the perception of high school used to be and what it is now. They have a lot of fun with that, especially like the whole. I mean, it was. And again, it's all going back to this like tongue-in-cheek thing of like them being aware of the setting, like when the TV show was out, and it was just really cool. Nice. I really liked it. I liked how aware they were, like almost breaking the third wall of how aware they were of some of the like stereotypical things.
Fourth wall
or four? No, dude, the third wall. They just how aware they were and how many jokes they were making at the expense of the old show. I thought was just a really cool way of knowing about it.
So. Give us a number review.
I would give it probably 3 out of 5 stars. I mean, it's not the kind of movie that I would, you know, want to watch every time it came on TV, but it was good. It was decent.
Is there any movie that fits that bill?
A League of Their Own.
Really? A League of Their Own.
Nice.
What do you want from me?
Rosie and Madonna.
Yeah, I mean, it's
can't
just,
lose.
It's just a good, wholesome family movie.
Have you ever actually seen that film?
Yes, I have.
League of Their Own?
Who directed that? It was somebody called, was it Rob Reiner? Or no, it was a female director, I want to say.
No, I think it was Penny Marshall who directed A League of Their Own.
That's right.
But yeah, probably 3 out of 5 stars.
I'd give it a 3.5, 4. Like, I mean, I'd say if I'm rating it on movies as a whole, 3.5. If I'm basing it on
what it is.
Yeah, like the remake genre, I'd give it a 4. It's one of the better remakes that I've seen lately.
Cool.
But it is it's definitely the latest of a very long line of movies that have been made that were adapted from older television shows.
Right. And right. Yeah, it's just another one of those trends that's kind of I don't want to say that I want to see it like stop, but I wish that it would just become a little more localized. Like I wish it wasn't so prevalent in movie making.
Yeah, and kind of in anticipation of that, what we at the Coneheads Theory did is we sat down and everybody came up with a list of movies that they thought were really good TV to movie adaptations, and then what we thought were really bad TV to movie adaptations. And our moderator, Mr. Wallow, took that list and divided it into movies that were universally agreed upon more or less as being good, universally agreed upon as being bad, and then movies that had some kind of contention between good and bad. And so, Mr. Wallow.
Well, I'll start with the universally accepted as good, then move on to the bad, then we'll get into the contested movies, because that's what we're going to have the most to talk about.
I'm sure, right.
So top of the list was, and these are actually all just fucking outstanding, Dragnet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dude, awesome.
Absolutely. Mission Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Not counting the second one.
Right. I think that's a very big distinction that not everybody made, but Steve Lacy did. And Mission Impossible 2 has to be one of the worst.
So bad. And what kills me about Mission Impossible 2 is it was directed by John Woo, who was for the longest time my favorite director.
Sure.
And that love affair, the beginning of the end of that love affair was Mission Impossible 2.
What about Broken Arrow?
I really like Broken Arrow.
I don't know what's seen it. I was just curious.
I don't know what's worse, that a nuclear weapon is missing, or that we have a term that it happens so often that we have a term for it.
Right.
That's a quote.
Yep. Yeah, I can quote that movie.
That's cool.
Anyway, moving on, so I can ignore my embarrassment. Star Trek, the 2009 Star Trek is on that list.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, on more than one list was 21 Jump Street.
Mm-hmm.
The original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, also on the top list. And let me know if anybody contests this, that it just wasn't on their list.
But I haven't seen
none of these are on my list, but they're all good.
And then we've got Blues Brothers.
Yes.
No. Not Blues Brothers 2000.
No. There was a Blues Brothers 2000.
Yeah,
I guess.
Have you seen it?
I must have Eternal Sunshine that right out of my head.
That has been erased.
I have not seen.
I haven't seen
2000, just because.
All right.
The idea of it kind of horrified me.
Bottom of the list, we have Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yep.
Yep.
Transformers.
Yes.
Smurfs.
God.
Yeah. Which I've. With the exception of Transformers, I haven't seen any of these on the bottom of the list. Yogi Bear and Dragon Ball.
See, wow. Dragon Ball.
Our sound tech just started vomiting all over himself.
Dragon Ball was kind of, for you, like with Blues Brothers 2000, that was one I completely had forgotten about until somebody brought it up like tonight, like before we started recording. And that's definitely worthy of the bottom of the
I have not actually barrel. Seen any of these.
Well,
I can only imagine, though.
They're all.
Now I've seen most of the ones on the contested list, and I would say that I can see it going both ways. Some of these on the list are a result of Stella Williams, who is now absent. She had to go see October Baby.
She died.
she went. She died while going to watch October Baby.
Yes. Coincidence,
but survived. That was the twist.
So. I'm just going to rattle them all off, and we can talk about them at your leisure. Get Smart was on the contested list. It was the...
All right, Steven.
I liked it.
Okay.
I have not seen it.
You saw it.
Though. I was not a huge fan.
I like the old school Get Smart. That was like where the voice for Inspector Gadget came
from. Right, yeah.
And that was my... I guess my whole thing was I was a huge fan. Like when I used to... When I used to live in Florida, like the one thing that I did with my grandfather every day was he was like addicted to TV Land, and Get Smart was one of the solid shows that we always used to watch. And I saw very, very little of the type of humor that came along with Get Smart in the movie.
Right.
There were a few, like, I mean, it wasn't overall just a horrible movie. Like, it was not the worst by any means, but for how high of a bar it had to meet, it, to me, fell very short of the list, or of that bar, which I guess is why it was on my
list. I hear you, but I mean, I also, I mean, that movie has my second favorite Bill Murray cameo.
No, yeah.
The man in the tree.
The man in the tree, and it's just like, yeah. What?
Nobody wants to talk to a guy in a tree.
But, okay, I hear what you're saying. But I thought, you know, it moved well. It was funny, and it had the same kind of sense of humor of just like absurdities that happened that made no actual sense.
Yeah,
and that was nice. Just, you know, the whole wait a minute, what's going on here? Like, she changed in like 15 seconds. Yeah. Like, I mean, I really like that.
It does have one of my favorite Steve Carell lines ever when they're at a ball and Anne Hathaway has to kind of flirt her way into this, to getting to talk to this terrorist guy. And so Steve Carell's standing next to her, and so she's like, this is my deaf, dumb manservant, blah, 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 blah. And so he has no idea that this plan is coming along, so he just looks at her and, like, with this perfect voice, just, okay. Like, and it's just, like, so flawlessly executed.
Is that where you get that?
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Like, and it's just – it's so funny. And that's the thing is, like, the movie definitely has some redeeming qualities. Just, like, overall, I guess it's more personal than anything else.
Good cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cast is great. I mean, it's
– yeah.
The Rock.
Terrence Stamp.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
Zod.
Yep.
Yep. Masioka, who played Hero on the TV show Heroes.
The street I grew up on was called Matioka. Sweet.
All right.
I'm actually rewatching Heroes
right now. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh. Heroes is like the sunshine of television shows. Start strong.
Start strong and great. Then what the hell?
Yeah.
I didn't even watch the last season.
Right.
Well, moving on down the list, there's one movie here that I just can't see how anybody could find any redeeming qualities in, which is Wild Wild West.
Wait a minute. Wild Wild West is contested?
Yeah. I believe
that, once again.
No.
Nope.
It wasn't the Hand of Stella.
Okay. I'm going to preface this by saying, no, listen.
No, he's still here.
Hold on. Listen. It was not on my top list. I had, okay, so when I turned in my list to Wallo, I had three lists. I had my top five, my bottom five, and then my honorable mentions.
Which was not the assignment.
I went above and beyond. Sue me. Honorable mentions were the films that I thought were not the best, they were not the worst, but they had redeeming qualities. Wild Wild West was put in there because I honestly have never seen the show, but for whatever reason, when I saw it, it was something to me, like, because I was like, I don't... Pilot, when did that come out?
99.
Okay, so I was 8 when that came out. For me, that was... Jesus. Right? That was something that was, like, of all the movies that had come out up to that date that I had seen, it was extremely new. Like, it was a very new kind of style, like, that I, like, from something that I was used to seeing. It was, I mean, it was very, like, it had a lot of steampunk elements, which I, until pretty recently, was only aware of. I mean, I don't know. It's, growing up, I enjoyed it.
If you ever want to hear a really funny story about the producer of that film, John Peters.
John Peters.
Look up Kevin Smith's Superman on YouTube.
And it's, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
John, and there's a whole story behind who John Peters is and how he got his start in Hollywood and
his reign.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
He's
like,
produced some, like, blockbuster.
Really?
I'd say mainly in the 80s was, like, his, like, heyday. Like, Flashdance, Top Gun. Like,
No. You're Patty thinking – Flat was. I think Flashdance was Bruckheimer and
gotcha.
Simpson. Yeah. Simpson and Bruckheimer. John Peters did the original – well, not the original, but he did the Tim Burton Batman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
John Peters was a producer on Flashdance.
Oh, he was. Yeah. Okay. All right. Wow.
As were
Simpson and Bruckheimer. Okay. But yeah, he's just a he's
no Simpson. Don Simpson. Never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Mubby.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, it's more of just like one of those guilty pleasure films. I don't know.
Wow, that's a lot of guilt.
Yeah. You like Pearl Harbor, so I guess we'll call it.
Dunskeys.
Yeah.
Put a bird on it.
Now, there's
fair enough.
There is another one that I want to hear some modicum of explanation for. G.I. Joe was contested.
Like that.
Well, I wrote G.I. Joe, but I was intending G.I. Joe the movie, the 80s cartoon.
Okay, so not G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra.
No, right. Although I have seen that, but it's not one of my...
No.
My bad.
Yeah. But no, G.I. Joe the movie was awesome.
Was it?
Lee yes. Badd.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It was awesome.
Lee Badd.
It was rad back in the day, but...
All right, so let's just move that to the bottom list.
Top.
I haven't seen that one.
It's awesome.
Lee Badd. Go on.
And then there were two other ones that I can see both ways. Starsky and Hutch and SWAT were both on the contested list.
You didn't like
list.
Starsky and Hutch.
I didn't really like Starsky.
What didn't you like about it?
I guess just some of the humor was like just so ridiculous. And just like, I don't know. Like it just.
But I mean, for the people that were making it, I guess. That's somewhat to be expected.
Well, yeah. But it was just, I don't know. It was.
I thought it had one of the most brilliant casting calls in a long time.
Which one?
Snoop Dogg as Huggy Bear.
Okay.
That's fucking brilliant. That's nothing shy of brilliant.
Yeah.
And he pulled it off brilliantly. He could have just as easily phoned in that whole performance and made bank. But he actually did an awesome job with it.
I'll give you that.
Starsky and Hutch was on my top five.
Yeah.
That's why I was curious.
I've seen it, but I don't remember it very well. I remember thinking it was like okay.
Yeah, I mean it was
I didn't.
It was kind of because who directed Starsky and Hutch? That was Todd Phillips. Okay, yeah, that's right. That was okay. So it had it was the Ben Stiller, like it was in the heyday of that like Will Ferrell, Wilson Brothers crew.
What's it called? Old School.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean it had all that whole cast, so you kind of have to expect that it's going to go way overboard. It's going to get super silly. But then they had like awesome, you know, tie-ins to the, I mean, they had like, let's see, Fred Williamson was the captain. I thought Vince Vaughn did an awesome, just like.
Has anybody here actually ever seen an episode of Starsky and
Hutch? Oh yeah. I grew up watching Starsky and Hutch. Nice. So, and that was kind of my point was like Starsky and Hutch was, I mean, for the time, I mean, it was the '70s, but it was like a pretty gritty TV show.
Really?
And they kind of,
I guess to me it was the same thing as 21 Jump Street. It was just something like it was so
21 Jump Street was fucking rad in the '80s.
Right.
Yeah. Launched one man's career while the rest one else from that show has done shit. Johnny Depp has gone on to legendary.
Richard Grieco.
If looks could kill, that was like his one movie. I think he's like literally doing a magic show in like Vegas or some shit, or it might be like Atlantic City.
What else has he been in?
Not if looks could kill in 21 Jump Street.
Oh, okay,
yeah. I mean, it's. I remember when they brought Richard Grieco in, and he was basically supposed to be like
he looks nice.
No, he doesn't. He was
it doesn't look like
he was basically supposed to be like the replacement.
Yeah, I haven't heard of anything.
Johnny Depp was leaving the show or he was thinking about leaving the show or something. And it was this whole,
right. He was like a late character to compensate poorly for.
He was kind of softening the blow of Depp leaving.
Yeah. Softening the blow of the cancellation of that show.
Wow.
Yeah. It didn't, I don't think it went on too.
He was on Gargoyles.
No, it was on for a while.
It wasn't Carl Weathers. Thinking about their boss.
No, their boss was Stephen something.
Was it the dude who played the mayor in The Wire?
Stephen Williams.
No, he was. Was he? No. No, that's the mayor on The Wire was Glenn Turman, I believe.
I was wondering, who's the guy on 21 Jump Street? Let's find that man. Stephen Williams. Click on his filmography.
We're just paused here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hey, he was in Blues Brothers.
Oh, yeah. I think he acted a lot more. Never mind. Done a lot of TV.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yep.
And, all right. Well, what did you, what about SWAT? That was the other one on the contest.
SWAT was on my honorable mention.
Yeah.
It was on honorable mention.
Show or the movie.
It was on honorable mention, like 80% of it was strictly because it was the first thing that I ever saw. The guy from Hurt Locker,
Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner, yeah. It was the first thing that I remember seeing him in.
That's
I remember
he played Gamble in that, didn't he?
Yeah. And that was the great thing of
Yes.
Yeah. And that was what I loved about it was the fact that he in a movie that like even, you know, when I first saw it, I recognized that it was all pretty not like campy acting, but it was, you know, it was pretty textbook like action, like, you know, summer action movie acting. He brought a decent amount of depth to the story. So I liked it because
just that actor.
That actor, that character was a lot deeper than most of the characters and actors in the film.
Who directed SWAT?
The director of SWAT was Clark Johnson.
Ah,
who did you ever see Homicide: Life on the Street?
No, I've heard of it.
Okay, he was on the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Who was he?
Let's see a picture.
He was. Meldrick Lewis?
No, we want to see a picture of the dude. God damn it.
Fail on me, pilot.
Shut the hell up.
Clark Johnson. All right, looks like Mexican Michael Madsen.
he's African American.
True. Who was?
But he's directed a bunch of episodes of The Wire. He directed a bunch of episodes of.
Was he ever in The Wire?
He directed an episode of The Walking Dead.
Really?
Nebraska.
Like he's pretty like I really like him. Nebraska was the episode of The Walking Dead where
Dale got killed, right?
No, it was the one where
fuck. Yeah, I am so really? Sorry to anyone out there who fucking has not watched season 2.
Just remember to bleep that out. Nebraska was the one where there's a confrontation in the bar.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They were burning bodies at the end. I remember that. I think they burned some bodies.
That's entirely possible.
I think it is.
Yep.
There was a Clutch song playing during that part.
Now, all right, well, getting the conversation rolling again, is there anything that you guys think of that...
We have to take a break, and we'll be back in...
Wop, wop, wop.
We will be back after this musical. I'm sorry.
Question.
It just hit me. There's like 20 seconds. Fucking...
We're not friends anymore, Chris.
That's it. Done.
Done.
It ended there and then. We never spoke again.
You and me are done, man. We're fucking done.
So we'll see you guys after this brief musical interlude in 30 seconds or less. Woo!
Fuck you.
Movies, our favorites, our least favorite, the ones that we disagreed on. But is there a general consensus about what a TV to movie adaptation needs to be able to bring the magic to the big screen? You know, more so than an original screenplay, is there anything that, you know?
For me, I think it needs to be either throw a hugely new a hugely new dimension into the storyline from the show. Because, like, the Simpsons movie is one example. It was done by the same people. It was all the same voice acting and everything like that. But it didn't really give you a whole lot of incentive to want to keep watching it because it just felt like a 30-minute – it was the exact same thing as if you were to watch a 30-minute episode of The Simpsons. So there wasn't really any incentive to watch the movie when you could just go and watch the show at any point.
I can think of one. Bart's dick.
That is true. You do get to see a little bit of Bart's dick. Spoiler alert.
In the Simpsons movie?
Yeah. No, like, yeah, you get to see Bart's dick.
Pretty much in the first 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a little disturbed, but all right.
But I guess all the top ones, like Star Trek, the Mission Impossible series for the most part, like all of those it hugely expanded. Star Trek, I think, is one of the most brilliant because it took the problem that a lot of show-to-movie adaptations have where it's like continuity with the show and kind of keeping it in line.
You're talking about the most recent...
Yeah, sorry, the 2009, the 2009 Star Trek. And they had a brilliant way around it.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, it was...
The, like, tangential universe.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Like right. The way that they got around it.
And then on top of that, I felt that the actors that they cast for the different roles,
right.
I cannot think of anybody who I did not like in that movie. You know,
yeah.
Playing their character. Mm-hmm. For me, the big standout, and every single time I talk about Star Trek, I have to talk about this, is that Carl Urban playing Bones. You know, and Carl Urban, who is, you know, like his other big role that people know him for was Yomer in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's this very big, muscular, you know, action
hero.
He's also
Red, actually.
Oh, yeah, right. Which I never actually saw.
It was decent.
He was also in one of the Chronicles of Riddick movies, too.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
The last one.
But yeah, just the fact that he has this very, like he kind of had established himself as this big kind of action-y guy.
Yeah.
And then to play a character like Bones in Star Trek, who, you know, if there's one character in Star Trek that never really kicks ass at all, that it's him.
Did he get any kick ass screen time? I can't remember.
No, he got a lot of screen time.
Yeah.
He was
but like ass kicking screen time. Like,
no, fighting. No. That's what I'm saying. I think that there were.
Did use the out of your Vulcan mind.
No, yeah. I mean, that was a great thing too. Was that his. Shit. He did the DeForest Kelly character so well that it was just that. I fell in love with him.
Oddly enough,
in a very man crush kind of way.
I really loved Bruce Greenwood as Pike too. I thought,
who was that?
Bruce Greenwood. I'm trying to think what else he's been.
He was the captain.
He was the one that basically got Kirk on to the into the Academy originally. He was the one, and what struck me about that movie more so than – I mean, the movie itself was beautiful, but the trailer – like the theatrical trailer was
awesome,
jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
That built more anticipation for a film than I can think – and like that's including like Lord of the Rings, everything. Like that movie, the trailer like set the bar so high for that movie in terms of anticipation.
The teaser?
Any trailer that they put out.
There was a sweet-ass Prometheus trailer before Hunger Games.
Yeah, there was.
Nice.
Man.
Yeah.
That was my first like glimpse of like a lot of the show.
Yeah, it was the first thing that showed – the Prometheus trailer was the first thing that shows you like a good idea of what the plot is going to be.
Yeah.
Which is going to be nice.
I actually – side note, but I finally saw Shame.
Okay. All right.
Michael
Fassbender. It was good.
And Michael Fassbender's penis.
And how? My man is packing heat. That's
wow.
No fucking exaggeration there. If I were him, I'd be doing the same kind of movies. He's also in Prometheus.
Yeah.
Right.
But no, Shame was really good. I saw Take Shelter.
Okay.
It's really good. Yeah.
Right on.
As well as The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about Star Trek?
Yeah, I was just saying what I love so much about Bruce Greenwood as Pike was he had the line that was the your father saved so-and-so like 500 lives in 8 minutes. I dare you to do better. Like that setting the tone for the entirety – like the entire idea of that storyline was just – I thought really great.
I just thought of that scene and I got goosebumps.
Yeah, right. And it's just one of those things where like you hear that and it's just – you know – It's chilling. Like
I really wish Michael Ironside was cast on that part. I'm just saying, man.
Yeah?
You ever seen fucking Starship?
Starship Troopers?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Remember him in that?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Total Recall? I know you have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, see you at the party,
Rector.
Dude, my brother just sent me a video. It was all the scenes of glass breaking in Total Recall. It's pretty epic. Like you never occurred to me how much glass is breaking.
Is it like the same kind of thing as like the fucking
pretty much just smash like bottles getting shot.
Yeah.
Him jumping through the airport thing. He's just the skeleton.
Right.
You think this is the real Quaid? It is. Consider that the divorce. Fucking Sharon Stone's launched her fucking career into nowhere. So where are we at? What are some other good ones?
Yeah, what
can you just do one of my picks, please?
Yeah.
So far we haven't. None of mine even got an honorable.
No, it's just
fucking
nobody
mention.
Nobody contested any of yours.
Yeah, so. Right.
Let's see. All right, so you had Brain Candy, Kids in the Hall movie.
Which is a sketch to, you know.
Right.
That wasn't necessarily a remake on a plotted program as much as it was an extension of their sketch comedy show. I think it was like their swan song when they got canceled.
Yeah, I think they made Break Candy right after they were the show was shit canned.
Now,
yeah.
is do you think there's a difference between adapting a tried and true television show and adapting a sketch from a sketch comedy show into a movie?
I think so, because you have to. Well, they both you have material to expound upon, but if it's one character from one sketch, I don't think you have as much of a history.
Right.
You'll have seasons of.
Like Wayne's World did fantastic. Wayne's World is probably one of my favorite Saturday Night Live
But that's movies. One of the only. I mean, that's one of the only ones I can think of that was, like, at least a successful film. As far
from
as.
From SNL?
Yeah. Like, as far as. At least
Blues
in the box
Brothers.
Office. Oh. Well, yeah, the Blues Brothers, but I'm saying, like, at the box office, I mean, you've got Wayne's World and Blues Brothers, and you've also got, like, Superstar. You've got MacGruber, you've got Night at the Roxbury.
Hot Rod isn't really counted as one, I don't think, but I would, because it's got a lot of SNL.
It's got a lot of SNL, like, muscle
behind
it. Lorne
Michaels, like, executive producer.
Right, but at the same time, I think it's just kind of more of that's Andy Samberg's character. It's not so much, like, I mean, he brings a lot of that same aspect to a lot of his characters in that show.
Well, I love it, too, because it really, that's definitely a film where I could absolutely tell that they were given complete artistic freedom. Like, they were just given a budget. There was nothing about that film smelt like, you know, any kind of studio intervention or
right.
It felt pretty pure, which is cool. It's rare.
Yeah.
You know, they just turned a blind eye and give them a budget.
And I guess talking about adaptations of sketches, you know, the Blues Brothers is another standout in that regard.
Yeah, for sure.
But
that was definitely a sketch first, right?
Oh yeah. Well, not even really a sketch. It was just they would come out as the Blues Brothers, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi, and they just perform a couple songs. Yeah. I was just like, okay, that's. And then they basically are like, we need to do a movie about these guys, and you get the Blues Brothers, which is, I still stand by this, the greatest musical ever made.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I can't argue that.
I have a few, like, faves, but
what's up there? It's up there for sure. What's the line? We've got a broken car.
Okay, no. It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
We're on a mission from
God. Are you the police? No, ma'am. We're musicians.
There's some real reachers, too, from the SNL realm.
Yeah.
MacGruber. It's Pat.
It's Pat. Superstar. Jesus.
Superstar,
Just out of curiosity, did Conan make anybody's list in any respect?
Yeah, actually, Stella put that on as one of her favorites.
Really? Okay.
So
I guess it would make sense.
Right.
Never actually seen the Conan.
Yep.
Yeah. Which actually, didn't we establish I was the only one? Yeah. So I'm gonna go ahead and put that on the contested list.
Yeah.
That movie was a big bag of shit.
A movie that was actually really funny was and actually really good was Stuart Saves His Family.
Oh yeah,
Stuart Smalley.
Smalley. Yeah.
I didn't realize they made any movies based on that character.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was a great character.
Al Franken.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Who is now the Honorable Al Franken?
Yeah.
The governor.
Governor?
He's a senator.
He's a senator.
Wow. He's a senator from Minnesota.
Wow, yeah, that's right.
Minnesota. Totally
that was the whole like race that never ended.
Oh yeah. Now there are two more on your list, Chris. That
two morons?
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah.
I know what you're.
No, there are two on here that are from different eras of, you know, sort of raunchy cartoon comedy, which is Beavis and Butthead, and then South Park movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
So, you know, tell us. I haven't seen either one of those.
Beavis and Butthead was just simply funny as shit, and it was cartoon to screen.
Beavis and Butthead Do America
was a great movie.
And I'm speaking as somebody who was indifferent to disliked the cartoon, to be perfectly honest. But the movie was hilarious.
Yeah.
And it really to me showcased the fact that Mike Judge, when he not that he doesn't want to be.
Was that his first like feature length?
I think that was his first feature length movie. And when he puts his mind to it, he can make just hilarious movies. And there was not to get all political or anything, but there was kind of a statement that was being made with the Beavis and Butthead movie. I couldn't tell you what that was.
Right.
because it's been a really long.
It had a great story. Like it was yeah. like a great like winding
right.
Muppet movie kind of.
And
like
then
search
and travel then wasn't didn't Cher weren't Cher and Bruce Willis the two?
No, it was Demi Moore.
Demi Moore and Bruce Willis. It was Cher. They did the like "I Got You, Babe" video.
That's right. That's right.
With Cher.
That's right. Yeah, they were Demi and Bruce were the married couple of criminals
they
or
had
something.
The late Robert Stack.
Yeah.
Who wanted to anal probe everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, actually, I just totally said the late Robert Stack. Is he all dead?
I'm sure he's dead.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Woo. Saved by the
since 2003. Wow.
Woo.
Wow.
He's been gone a while.
Oh, man. Unsolved
Robert
mysteries.
Stack, Robert Stack actually starred in a TV series that was turned into a TV show that made my excellent adaptation list, which was The Untouchables.
Ooh. They're going to say Airplane. Sorry about that. But The Untouchables.
Going back to his list, though, when you were saying that, Stephen, you were saying that Blues Brothers was your favorite. I would say that South Park is one of my favorite musicals. Yeah. Like South Park, the music in that was both hilarious and just really well written.
Yeah. Kind of ridiculously
I believe Blame
amazing
was,
that was
yeah.
Blame Canada was nominated for, yeah, for performed Oscar. By Robin Williams at the Academy
I
Awards.
Remember that.
And the lead off tune was Uncle Fucker.
Right.
Like it was like a full on musical wasn't that
No,
the first song
was it was the Quiet Mountain Town.
Yeah.
Where they're introducing reintroducing South Park, which was brilliant. And actually kind of interestingly it kind of reminds me of the same way that the opening song for Muppets played out where it's just kind of like winding through the town. Like it's like the main character just walking through the town.
Characters.
Yeah. But yeah, that movie was great.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's it.
No, I hate it when I have a thought and then I lose it like literally 2 seconds before I'm about to say something. So
yeah, South Park, and I think the last one on my list was, and just full on honorable mention was Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me.
Ooh, contested.
Yeah, contested. Yeah, I remember you saying that. What didn't you dig about it?
Just that it was so, like the thing that I really liked about Twin Peaks, like, I mean, I understand that David Lynch is an extremely talented filmmaker. And that's definitely not something I would dispute. However, for me, I find a lot of his work inaccessible because I don't get it. And I feel like I hate to admit that I don't get it a lot of the time because I know a lot of my film buff friends who love David Lynch look at me and think that I'm some kind of a Philistine.
Right.
And the movies of his that I've liked are the movies that have a relatively coherent narrative. You know,
like Dune, Blue Velvet.
Well, no, Dune was terrible.
Wow.
Okay. As compared to the books, Dune was terrible.
I haven't read them.
but yeah, Blue Velvet, Elephant Man, Wild at Heart.
Yeah.
Which
was still heartily bizarre.
But it was still – there was a coherent – there was like a beginning, a middle, and an end to the story.
Yes.
And then with movies like – and I really liked Mulholland Drive, but that is, for me is still kind of on the border of how coherent was that film actually. But whatever.
I'll share my thoughts on that after the podcast because it would take up way too much. But to me, Lynch films are some of them the less like coherent seeming ones.
Mm-hmm.
To me, are like they're encoded, and it's hard to know what's dream, what's literal, what's figurative, because he literally jumps between what's figurative, what's just somebody's perspective. Like
one of the things that I absolutely
Highway is the other big one. That's like a fucking wall.
Right.
So
I
have to take it as it comes.
And one of the things that I will say that I really love about David Lynch is the fact that he doesn't do audio commentaries on his movies when they come out on DVD. And it's just like, I really respect that he's like, you know, it's not my job to try and explain my film to you. Either you like it and you get it or you don't. And
he's notorious about that. Like even at Con and stuff, when he did. I think it was either Lost Highway or Mulholland. They're pressing him, and he just – it was Mulholland Drive because his answer was, it's a love story in the city of dreams, which to me is like double entendre with the interpretation I walked away with.
Right,
it's
right.
It's like it's a double entendre, but that's as far as he'd go.
So on that note, with Firewalk with me, I definitely felt as though that there was a whole like, what? Like, and I liked the show, Twin Peaks. And I felt that the show, Twin Peaks, was a very – for all of its weirdness, there was still a coherent storyline that was taking place.
Yeah. And well, Firewalk with Me, you know, it was like a prequel.
Right. Yeah. But even as the prequel, it just kind of felt like, what? Like, I don't know. I kind of feel as though he just, like, threw stuff out there. It was like, hey, here you go.
Well,
Thumbs up.
I didn't think so because – The film itself is the backstory is the show Twin Peaks, which is about a murder of a homecoming queen in a small Pacific Northwest logging community, and pretty much the entirety of the show is post mortem. It's about the investigation and all the characters in the town. You get flashbacks here and there. Fire Walk with Me is Laura Palmer, who is the murder victim of the show. It's her the time leading up to her murder. Like what she was mixed up in, like, you know, what she was going through. And so it's basically a glimpse into what happened leading up to the show. So for me, there wasn't much like mystery. I mean, there's some stuff that's literally the mystery that's part of the plot, you know, but it didn't strike me as random or incoherent or, you know, I wouldn't even say like irresponsible, even though I can say that David Lynch actually called that film in Wild at Heart, like missteps, I guess, like mistakes, which I couldn't disagree more, but, you know, because I love both of them. But,
right.
So there's that.
All right.
Well, before we wrap up, I think we should probably pay attention to some fan feedback.
Ass to mouth.
Feedback. All right. So, as per usual, we've received
zero.
Why you no feedback?
Yeah.
Why you know?
So, just want to throw it out there. Added incentive. There is a feedback at stake.
Big one.
There is a chance to stump Steven if you have, or Chris or Harrison. If you have an opinion on anything we talked about today, 21 Jump Street, The Hunger Games, Battle Royale, TV to movie adaptations, we would love to hear from you. We really want to know what you think. So just send us something. We're at coneheadstheory@gmail.com. That about covers it. And again, the feedback is still up for grabs.
Ever growing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Every day that passes.
Lots of organic material in that feedback.
Lots.
Thus ending this episode's version? Is that the word?
It's
installment.
Yeah, there we go.
This episode's installment of Fan Feedback.
Ass mode.
So yeah, anybody have any closing thoughts for us today? Any special things?
What opens this
you're
week?
You're laughing at me. I don't know why you're laughing.
I just feel like there's a lot of ground to cover on that topic. It's like, what have we learned? Well, nothing. But
well, you know, we're learning impaired.
No,
so
it was fun though. It was cool. Good topic.
What? All right. This
any,
week we've
are there
got
up and comers.
Yeah, this week opening we've got Wrath of the Titans. We've got Mirror Mirror.
Oh, man.
Mirror Mirror. Which of the Snow White films is that? That's the one with.
That's the one.
That's
with
one with Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts.
Okay, so
Snow White and the Huntsman is the other one.
Goon. Ooh, I do want to see that. Is that
based on the graphic novel? The Goon?
I don't know. Sean William Scott and Jay Baruchel.
Who's Jay Baruchel? Right, about
and,
the...
And Liev Schreiber.
Okay.
Yeah, it's basically Sean William Scott is...
Okay, from the...
Yeah, it's basically... No.
What?
That actor.
He was not... No, he was in Tropic Thunder, How to Train Your
Dragon. Yeah, he's the up-and-coming actor.
The only one. It's about Sean William Scott is basically like this guy who he's this hockey player who is like an enforcer. He gets recruited to this like, you know, kind of like, you know, minor league hockey team as an enforcer, and Liev Schreiber is this established enforcer. For those of you who don't, enforcers are basically ones that just beat the shit out of each other in hockey, and so it's basically like this impending showdown between the two of them.
It's like Mighty Ducks meets the Punisher.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. I think that's what it's being billed as. Yeah,
sold as.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it looks really good.
What was Intruder? That looked fucked up.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. That's
some.
She does not look.
I have nothing. Clive Owen is in it. Which, yeah,
biggest star in it.
I have to look at that.
The only Clive star in it.
A one man.
Yeah.
It's one man vehicle,
yeah. Right?
Did Silent House already come out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did it
spend any time on the top 10 list?
Ne'er do well. Nope. If it did, it was last week.
I think it premiered at number 31.
Word.
Oh, wow. Ouch.
Yeah, it was pretty damn bad.
Ouch.
Please stop making that noise.
Watch it be like totally absolutely badass.
Right.
No,
right.
I still want to see it, like regardless of where it opened.
Just it opened to see. In a lot of places.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I guess we will – I don't know if I'm not planning on seeing any of the movies that we just talked about.
What –
Maybe Goon, but.
Yeah, is Goon going to be even – is that limited release or is that wide?
Straight to video.
You know, I'm actually going to go see Mirror Mirror this weekend just because I want to see it so that Snow White and the Huntsman will be even better.
When you say even better.
Yeah.
Better than it would have been.
You're implying that it would have been good. Yeah. Okay.
I'm implying that it's going to be good because I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. It looks like the more interesting of the two.
Well, yeah. I mean, it definitely, of the two, it looks better.
Who here has seen all the Twilight movies? I think I'm going to watch them.
This is, I think, the same conversation as like when you ask somebody, like, hey, who's on heroin? Like,
anybody on
Spy? I think I'm going to do heroin. I think that's on par with that conversation.
Yeah.
I might go see Wrath of the Titans just because.
Wrath of the Titans is sort of based on a TV show. It's based on a TBS midday staple of starring Harry Hamlin and Burgess fucking Meredith. One of the best movies ever.
Hey, Ray Harryhausen did the who? Creature effects. Ray Harryhausen?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like all the stop action.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
He did all the like Jason and the Argonauts and Sinbad.
He's the Godfather, and he's still alive. So
did he do Army of Darkness? All the skeleton army?
I think he might have. Oh, wow.
And that noise
shit.
Is the magic word.
That
burns.
Means, yeah, cherry.
Jesus.
Oh. Jesus.
Well, hey, I guess now we know that the countdown timer will ring a loud fucking bell to indicate that
one more time is up.
Time is up. All right.
Ding, ding, ding.
Well, I mean, I guess that pretty much wraps it up for us.
That's it.
So
I'm your co-host, Harrison Williams.
I'm your co-host, Chris Thomas.
And I'm your Cobra. No,
Cobra drinking.
I'm your Cobra drinking co-host, Stephen Lacy.
And I'm your moderator, Andrew Wallow. Joined with us today was sound tech Elliot Gilliard, our fact checker Pilot Matuzak, and studio boy Harrison. Brian Mills every fucking time. And we'd like to put out a special thanks to Stella Williams, our guest commentator, who had to leave early for her abortion. But
we here at the Codeheads Theory would like to
apologize to Stella Williams.
Would like to distance ourselves from the comments made by our moderator Andrew Wallow.
The opinions expressed by
our moderator have nothing to do with any of ours,
except mine.
No, we really like to thank you for listening. It couldn't be possible without you. Send us an email at coneheadstheory@gmail.com. Follow us at Twitter at Gmail or at @coneheadstheory. And yeah, we look forward to talking at you next week.
Coneheads Theory was recorded, as always, at the Grove Street Studios in beautiful spring-like.
Summer-like.
So, yeah.
Oh, spring was last winter.
Right.
Like, I'm sweating through my pants right now.
It's yeah. the summerish Charleston, South Carolina. So,
and then there's the pits of hell.
Right, right. So,
otherwise known as Florida.
Otherwise known as the market
in August.
So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Eat a dick. Motherfuckers.
No!
Jankum Nickelback.